Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Why is the government of El Salvador continuing to imprison a man where they have no evidence he's committed any crime and they've not been provided any evidence from the United States that he's committed a crime?
Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen goes to El Salvador but is blocked from meeting Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father sent to the notorious SECAT mega prison in an administrative error. Meanwhile, a constitutional crisis is emerging as a judge finds probable cause to hold the Trump administration in criminal contempt for its willful disregard of his order to stop the first flights of immigrants to El Salvador last month. We'll get the latest. Then to Sudan.
As we enter our third year of war in Sudan, our hopes are about to evaporate before our eyes, especially after the massacre of Zamzam Camp, the largest IDP camp in Sudan, and where my family have lived for nearly 20 years. If we don't act now, we'll be facing the Al-Fashir massacre.
We'll speak with Darfurian refugee Emmy Mahmoud and Jan Egeland, head of the Norwegian Refugee Council. He's also just back from a trip to the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where President Trump is hoping to cut a mineral deal. And finally, one day, everyone will have always been against this. We'll speak with award-winning author Omar El-Ahed, whose new book is out about the war on Gaza. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. U.S. District Judge James Bobitzberg said Wednesday he has probable cause to hold the Trump administration in criminal contempt of court over its willful disregard of his order last month to halt flights transferring immigration detainees from the U.S. to the notorious SECAT mega prison in El Salvador. Judge Bobitzberg noted Trump officials have since failed to rectify or explain their actions, giving the administration 1 week until April 23rd to respond. On Wednesday, Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen traveled to El Salvador but was blocked from meeting with Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a Maryland father who was sent to the mega prison on the March flights in what the Department of Homeland Security has admitted was an administrative error. Both the Trump administration and the government of President Nayib Bukele has refused to release and return Abrego Garcia. Senator Van Hollen spoke to reporters in San Salvador after meeting with the Salvadoran vice president.
I'm asking President Bukele, under his authority as president of El Salvador, to do the right thing and allow Mr. Abrego Garcia to walk out of a prison, a man who's charged with no crime, convicted of no crime, and who was illegally abducted from the United States.
Senator Van Hollen said the vice president of Salvador told him the country would keep Abrego Garcia locked up since the U.S. government is paying El Salvador to do so. The senator also said more members of Congress are planning to visit El Salvador soon. Van Hollen's visit came as Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth welcomed El Salvador's defense minister to the Pentagon. After headlines, we'll be joined by Vince Warren of the Center for Constitutional Rights for more on the story. Meanwhile, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents are continuing to carry out violent raids and arrests across the United States. Videos emerge showing ICE agents smashing a car window and forcibly removing a man this week in New Bedford, Massachusetts, even after he explained to officers he was not the person they'd been looking for and that he was waiting for his lawyer to arrive. Juan Francisco Mendez is a 29-year-old father from Guatemala who's currently in the midst of immigration proceedings to finalize his asylum status in the United States. In California, faith leaders and community members gathered Wednesday to protest Trump's plans to turn the notorious, now-shuttered Dublin Women's Prison, dubbed the Rape Club, into an ICE detention center. This is Reverend Deborah Lee.
He's trying to get billions of dollars to go towards the Department of Homeland Security for ICE operations, to move people, to arrest people, to detain people, and to deport people. We all know that this will make our communities more unsafe. And we know that he cannot deport people without detention beds, which is why this place is so important that we not allow more detention beds to open up here in Northern California.
The IRS is reportedly considering revoking Harvard's tax-exempt status in retaliation for Harvard refusing to collaborate with the Trump administration over its demands related to DEI and criminalizing free expression. The Trump administration has already moved to block over $2 billion in federal funds for Harvard. The Justice Department suing the state of Maine after it refused to comply with a Trump administration order banning trans athletes in school sports. This is U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi.
The state of Maine is discriminating against women by failing to protect women in women's sports. We are seeking to have the titles returned to the young women who rightfully won these sports. And we are also considering whether to retroactively pull all the funding that they have received for not complying in the past.
Maine's governor, Janet Mills, responded in a statement, quote, "This is not just about who can compete on the athletic field. This is about whether a president can force compliance with his will without regard for the rule of law that governs our nation. I believe he cannot," Governor Mills wrote. Israel's military has stepped up a series of deadly strikes on tent encampments for displaced Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, as the United Nations warns Israel's renewed assault has uprooted about 500,000 people since Israel shattered the ceasefire in March. Earlier today, an Israeli airstrike targeted tents in the Jabalia refugee camp, killing at least 7 people. Separately, 10 Palestinians were killed in an overnight attack on a tent encampment in Khan Yunis, with children among the dead and wounded.
A 12-year-old disabled child. He burned to death in his wheelchair. We carried him. Even his bones had melted as we pulled him out. This is the child's wheelchair. A child, 12 years old.
Palestinians are marking the annual Prisoners' Day holiday, with marches demanding the release of political prisoners. Rights groups say there are nearly 10,000 Palestinians currently held in Israeli jails. 400 of them are children. More than a third are being held without charge under Israel's so-called administrative detention policy. On Wednesday, a lawyer for the jail director of Gaza's Kamel Edwin Hospital, Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya, said his client had experienced beatings, mistreatment, and torture inside Israel's notorious Ofer prison. The lawyer, who was last able to visit Dr. Abu Safiya on March 19th, said, quote, "He's suffering greatly. He's exhausted from the torture, the pressure, and the humiliation he's endured to force him to confess to acts he did not commit," unquote. Bloomberg News is reporting U.S. officials are in talks with pro-government militias in Yemen about a possible ground offensive to oust Houthi fighters from the Red Sea coast. U.S. aerial attacks on Yemen since mid-March have killed at least 123 people as Houthis vow to continue targeting ships in the region that are tied to Israel's war on Gaza. Last week, a group of Democratic lawmakers called on the Trump administration to halt its attacks on Yemen, citing the War Powers Resolution, which requires congressional approval or a declaration of war to directly attack another country. Protests against Israel's assault on Gaza continue. Over the weekend, tens of thousands of people marched through the Pakistani city of Karachi in solidarity with Palestinians. On Wednesday, police in Berlin violently arrested Palestinian solidarity protesters in front of Humboldt University. That followed similar scenes in the Netherlands on Monday when Dutch police used batons to beat protesters who'd occupied a campus building to demand the University of Amsterdam cut ties with Israeli institutions. In Britain, police arrested 2 people Wednesday as they held a protest on the roof of a factory that supplies hardware to Israel's biggest weapons producer, Elbit Systems. The activists reportedly sabotaged parts inside the grid defense systems factory before climbing to the rooftop and unfurling a banner reading, "Grid and Elbit, blood on your hands."
are just regular people who oppose genocide, who oppose companies on UK land selling weapons that are used to kill children. In the past month alone, we have seen babies with no heads, children's bodies blown apart.
Bodies, dead weight, literally flying from the sky from how powerful these bombs are that are obliterating entire neighborhoods. We cannot stand back and just do nothing.
In Kentucky, prosecutors are asking a Louisville judge to silence any discussion of genocide or Israel's assault on Palestinians ahead of the June trial of five activists who were arrested last year as they blocked entrances to plants operated by Raytheon and BAE Systems, which supply weapons to the Israeli military. The motion also seeks to bar defendants from wearing Palestinian keffiyehs and from holding protests in the vicinity of the courthouse. In Sudan, the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group has declared the formation of a rival government as Sudan enters its third year of a devastating civil war that spawned the world's largest humanitarian crisis. The conflict showing no signs of ending after high-level meetings in London collapsed this week, and the Sudanese army remains engaged in bloody battles with the RSF. At least 300 people were killed in displacement camps over the weekend in the war-ravaged western Darfur region. We'll have more on Sudan later in the broadcast. Human Rights Watch is warning the Tunisian government has turned arbitrary detention into, quote, a cornerstone of its repressive policy, unquote. As President Kais Saied continues to crack down on his opponents and critics, this comes amidst a mass trial against dozens of people, including prominent politicians and media figures who the Saied government has accused of plotting against the state. Last week, six detained opposition figures launched a hunger strike while hundreds of protesters took the streets of Tunis.
It's tyranny in every sense of the word. No freedom of opinion, no freedom of expression, no freedom of action. Over the smallest thing, a person finds themselves in prison. Even what I'm saying now could get me arrested in jail tomorrow. This is reality. I'm not making this up.
In Colombia, indigenous leader Eric Anderson Menzapavi was shot and killed in the southwest Cauca region on Saturday. He's at least the third indigenous community leader to be killed in the region this year. Rights groups warn the survival of the indigenous Nasa people are at heightened risk amidst the systematic attacks. Back here in the United States, California is suing to block President Trump's tariffs, which it says are illegal and economically destructive. This is California Attorney General Rob Bonta.
Trump has had to resort to creating bogus national emergencies that defy reason. He's even claimed there's an influx of illegal immigration and illicit drugs crossing over the Canadian border as the basis for imposing across-the-board tariffs on Canada. It is completely untrue.
In other trade news, President Trump claimed big progress was made in tariff negotiations with Japan after Trump unexpectedly joined the preliminary talks Wednesday. Meanwhile, Italy's far-right Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni is at the White House today, where she's expected to defend European trade interests as she meets with Trump. Here in New York, two white prison officers were charged with second-degree murder over the killing last month of Masaya Nantwi, a black 22-year-old prisoner who died at the Mid-State Correctional Facility after being viciously beaten by guards. Another eight officers were charged with related offenses in the fatal beating, which took place during a prison guard wildcat strike. And in Puerto Rico, the Luma Energy Corporation says it could take up to 3 days to restore electricity after the island's energy grid collapsed Wednesday, plunging the entire island, plunging Puerto Rico into darkness for the second time in 4 months. It's the latest in a series of blackouts since Puerto Rico privatized its electrical grid in the wake of Hurricane Maria in 2017. Puerto Ricans pay some of the highest electricity rates in the U.S. despite frequent outages. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. We begin today's show with the emerging constitutional crisis, as U.S. District Court Judge James Boasberg said Wednesday he found, quote, probable cause to hold the Trump administration in criminal contempt after its willful disregard of his order last month to halt flights transferring immigration detainees from the U.S. to El Salvador, where they ended up at the notorious Sicot mega prison. Judge Boasberg noted in his order yesterday, Trump officials have since, quote, failed to rectify or explain their actions. Boasberg has given the administration 1 week, that is, until April 23rd, to respond. In his 46-page ruling, Boasberg recounted what happened when he directed officials to stop the planes from being sent to El Salvador, writing in part, quote, by mid-Sunday morning, the picture of what had happened the previous night came into clearer focus. It appeared that the government had transferred members of the plaintiff class into El Salvador's custody hours after this court's injunction prohibited their deportation under the proclamation. Worse, boasts by defendants intimated that they had defied the court's order deliberately and gleefully. The Secretary of State, for instance, retweeted a post in which, above a news headline noting this court's order to return the flights to the United States, the president of El Salvador wrote, quote, oopsie, too late.
And the U.S. Secretary of State retweeted the Salvadoran president. The legal escalation came as Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen traveled to El Salvador but was blocked from seeing or speaking to Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a Maryland father who was sent to the mega prison in El Salvador on the March flights and what Homeland Security has admitted was an administrative error. Both the Trump administration and the government of President Nayib Bukele have refused to release and return Abrego Garcia. Van Hollen, Senator Van Hollen, spoke to reporters in San Salvador yesterday after meeting with the Salvadoran vice president.
The Trump administration is clearly in violation of American court orders. Why is the government of El Salvador continuing to imprison a man where they have no evidence he's committed any crime, and they've not been provided any evidence from the United States that he's committed a crime? President Trump and our Attorney General Pam Bondi and the Vice President of the United States are lying when they say that Abrego Garcia has been charged with a crime or is part of MS-13. That is a lie.
Senator Van Hollen said El Salvador's vice president told him that they would keep Abrego Garcia locked up since the U.S. government is paying his country to do so. The senator also said more members of Congress are planning to visit El Salvador soon. Van Hollen's visit came as Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth welcomed El Salvador's defense minister to the Pentagon. For more, we're joined by Vince Warren, Executive Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. So, Vince, we've got these two situations, both clearly leading up to, if we're not already in, a constitutional crisis. You have the judge in Kilmar's case demanding evidence that the Trump administration is working to get him home, facilitating. And you've got Judge Boasberg saying he is about to find Trump officials in criminal contempt. Explain, start there, and what this is all about. Not civil contempt, criminal contempt. The next key date is next Wednesday, April 23rd.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. We actually are in a situation now where we have two federal judges that are demanding information about the government's actions in deporting people. And that's a normal exercise. What is not normal here is that the government is providing no information, not even the most basic factual information about what's been happening. So the criminal contempt stems from Judge Boasberg's finding that because the government has apparently deported, sent men to El Salvador after the judge's order, rather that they were in El Salvador after the judge's order and they could have been brought back. He's saying that this was done willfully, and you know, putting that in English, what willfully means is that you did it on purpose, you knew what you were doing, and you actually didn't care. And that is punishable by criminal contempt. What's interesting here is that the Supreme Court also, as your viewers know, found that it essentially disbanded this big TRO that Judge Boasberg did. But Judge Boasberg is saying, look, there was a judicial order from this court saying, turn the planes around, and you did not do it. You didn't give us a reason why you didn't do it. You know, posted oopsie and thumbed your nose at the judge. We can't have a situation where the administration just doesn't care what the federal courts say about what they do.
Well, who would be responsible? I mean, if there is, presumably because, as you said, it's criminal contempt, someone would be responsible for carrying out that punishment. But that something would be the Department of Justice, which is itself responsible or answerable to the Trump White House.
Yeah, this is where it gets really, really messy, Nermeen. So the court has a number of options, and one of the options is to refer the case to the Justice Department upon a finding of probable cause, and the Justice Department should prosecute. I don't think that Pam Bondi is going to prosecute anything. So that's one problem. Another problem is that the judge will say, well, I will appoint a judge to prosecute this case if the Department of Justice won't. That can move forward, but it does require people being brought in before the court to be able to face those charges. And of course, the entity that actually apprehends people to bring them to the court is the U.S. Marshals, which is under the purview of what? Yeah. the executive branch. So essentially, there are three opportunities for the court, for the Trump administration to thumb their nose. Number one, they can say, no, we're not going to prosecute. Number two, they can order the marshals not to apprehend people. Number three, even if it goes forward, that the president can still issue a pardon. So what we're talking about here is a constitutional crisis that is going to be made real only by the inaction and the refusal to comply with the law by the Trump administration.
And what kind of explanation would be sufficient, do you think, by a week from now on the 23rd? What would the Trump administration need to provide?
Well, there are two things that I think that are important for this. Number one is that they need to provide real-time information about their attempts to comply with the judge's order during that time. Judge, we tried to do this. We asked so-and-so to not send the so-and-so, and that's not one thing. Another thing that they can actually do is that they can reassert jurisdiction and custody over the people that are in El Salvador, meaning that they do have the ability, being in U.S. custody, even in El Salvador, to be able to comply with the court's orders, particularly with respect to giving hearings to the men who they've transferred. The irony of this whole thing is that what Judge Boasberg is doing, it's providing the government with the same type of due process in terms of criminal contempt that the government refuses to give to the men that they have sent to El Salvador. So due process apparently only works one way, and they will demand due process in these hearings for their government officials, but they will not give it to the people that they're sending away.
So one way that the White House could cure this is just sending the men back on the plane, right? I think that the judge has made that clear. The other way is to explain who is responsible next Wednesday. And these two cases are related because one of the men on those flights was Kilmard. Can you talk about the significance of the Maryland senator? Kilmar's from Maryland. He's Salvadoran, fled gang violence in Salvador, came to Maryland, and there he's lived for many years. But also, while they talk about Kilmar, there's no evidence that he is guilty of any crime. It makes it sound like the other hundreds of men are. You've got the front page of the New York Times today, actually, labeled alien enemies and banished with little or no evidence. The hundreds of men, a number of them can be in the same situation as Kilmar. Now, we've got the judiciary, we've got the executive branch, and we've got the legislative branch. That's Maryland Senator Van Hollen. He can't get an answer, and we watched President Trump sitting with Salvador's president, Bukele. He didn't turn to him and say, I want Kilmar returned. No one doubts for a minute that if President Trump ordered that, he would be returned immediately.
Exactly. That situation with the two presidents sitting there like, oh, bro, what are we going to do? Was outrageous. And, you know, I will tell you that if I were in any place in the world and there was a warrant for my arrest to come back to the United States, they would have me back in 45 minutes. So they're saying, oh, there's nothing we can do. It's outrageous. It's ridiculous. It's wrong. It's a lie. And I think the significance of Congress people going down to CECOT to demand to see the people that are there, that are in their jurisdiction or from their jurisdiction, is really key. I would also note that the El Salvador president has no problem having Republicans come down. They can do, you know, beauty pageants in front of CICOT with Kristi Noem and have Republicans go in. But you can't, they're not allowing the Democrats to go in. That's, you know, that's pure politics. And it's actually messing up the way that the judicial branch and the executive branch and legislative branch should be working to solve this problem.
Do we have proof that Kilmer is even alive?
I have not heard information on that at all.
No one has spoken to him, apparently.
And that's why it's important for lawyers and for people to be able to come down and see them and to talk with them, because anything could have happened. They could be tortured. They could be dead. They could have medical emergencies. And so it's not just an empty political exercise to be able to go down to talk to people. This is sort of core human rights work. You have to lay eyes on human beings to figure out what's happening to them and what conditions that they're in, and then you go from there.
Well, I mean, could you talk, Vince, also about the way in which all of these different law firms, the entire legal foundation of the U.S., they're such key institutions that are capitulating to Trump one after the other. What do you think, what are the effects of that likely to be as Trump continues all of these extra legal measures and invoking this 1798 Alien Enemies Act to do what he's doing in the first place?
I talk to people in law firms and I say, you have to understand that you right now, law firms, are the biggest tool in building an authoritarian regime. Because everybody knows the first thing they do is they go after the judiciary, they go after the legislative branch, they go after the lawyers, they go after civil society, they go after universities. This has happened in every country in which there's been an authoritarian regime. And here the lawyers are capitulating, the law firms, I should say, are capitulating. And they're creating a tremendous opportunity for one, for us to not be able to vindicate the rights of the people that are being taken. But number two, in these shady deals that they have, they're agreeing to provide billions of dollars of free legal advice to the Trump administration. And you know doggone well that the Trump administration is not going to allow these law firms that used to be with us representing the victims to now represent the victims. They're only going to represent the perpetrators, which is the Trump administration.
I mean, this is very important that Trump has demanded, and a number have acceded to, or several have acceded to, $100 million worth to law firms in this case of pro bono work for the causes that Trump cares about. But what isn't said is that then they probably will not represent pro bono people like those that you work with these law firms to represent. And I was wondering if I could ask you about the one case that you have just joined, Center for Constitutional Rights, in filing an amended habeas corpus petition on behalf of another person taken to CECOT. That's Erickson David Cantero Chacon. Who is he?
So we filed this case because we have a number of clients that are in immigration detention right now and that need to be protected against moving forward. We're very concerned that the larger case is being sort of obstructed by the fact that these people are being moved. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to secure for as many people as we can the right to be able to have their immigration cases done fully and done completely. We're trying to avoid the context that was happening in the Garcia case, where they just rush people off. And the judges and the lawyers are saying, you shouldn't take this person because they're not who you're saying that they are. And we're trying to be able to put plants in the sort of flags in the ground in a number of places in order to make sure that doesn't happen to future people.
I want to thank you very much for being with us. Your final comment, lawyer, deeply concerned about what's taking place, what you are most watching out for right now.
What I'm watching out for, and I think what we should be concerned about really are two things overall in the Trump legal fights. And that is, number one, I'm concerned that the courts will capitulate and that the courts will, that other federal judges will allow the Trump administration to get away with what they're trying to do. And the other thing that I'm concerned about is, even if the courts don't capitulate, if they do issue these orders, I'm very concerned that the Trump administration will say, yeah, oopsie, we don't really care.
Vince Warren, Executive Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Next up, Sudan is facing the world's largest humanitarian crisis as it enters its third year of a devastating civil war. We'll speak with a Darfurian refugee and with the head of the Norwegian Refugee Council, both about Sudan and also the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo. Stay with us.